I've never rolled so many ones on a dice in my entire life.
The BGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 480, recorded on November 13th, 2017. Hello and welcome to the 483rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 316th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Derp.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So if you're wondering why this podcast is late, well, we did record another podcast. However, before I could edit it and upload it, my computer's hard drive decided it was time to go to sleep for a while. It's an old hard drive. It's like 4 years old, and it's starting to break down. So I had to get the computer repaired. I have a new, spanking new hard drive, which is fast, and the old hard drive is in a slave. I'm not actually using it for storage, just to see if there's anything which I need from that hard drive to transfer it over here if I need it. So, other than that, I have some significant new hard drive to discuss, but we will discuss that after we talk about what have you been playing, TJ.
So yeah, this last weekend I got back into, I was working on a Hand of Fate 2, which is a card game slash roguelike slash brawler. And I forget who does this one, but
I bet I can tell you.
Yeah.
It's Defiant Development.
Defiant Development, of course. But yeah, the idea behind it is there's some very light character creation, and it plays out like an RPG, but it's like a tabletop game. Essentially, you're sitting across from this magic man who lays out cards in all these different scenarios, and each of them has sort of a goal. Each of them has a thing that you have to do to complete the scenario. And he lays out all these cards that you have to basically in a certain pattern, and you have a starting point that you have to traverse the cards to complete the scenario. And each card flip is an encounter. Like sometimes you'll run into an ambush and have to go into a brawling style game, which is a lot like combat in Arkham Asylum. And then down to the key of like you have to. As people come in, you have to dodge the attacks, you have to throw your own, and just be careful about countering and your own weapons. And then outside of that, like there's other encounters where sometimes it'll be like a chance roll with dice, shuffled cards, where you pick one out of several failures and a couple successes. Or you might have a spinning wheel that has similar cards, like you get an item, you fight an enemy, or you fail or lose health or something. And it's fun. It's really fun. Like just like the level of like randomness, the level of overcoming something that's like ridiculously randomized and kind of difficult at times. But it does have some of the most cruel luck factors I've ever seen in a video game. Like I've never rolled so many ones on a dice in my entire life. I couldn't if I tried.
You know, it's sort of like XCOM 2, in which you have a 95% chance of shooting. Oh, you missed.
Yeah,
he's right in front of you. He's in your face, and oh yeah, you must have had a hiccup because you missed him.
He's literally down the barrel of your shotgun.
That would happen in Civ 4 as well. You'd have a 99% chance of winning and you lose.
Yeah, and I mean like those games, it's not enough to it's frustrating. It like I definitely had my occasions where I like was really mad that I lost an encounter specifically based on just luck and sheer bad juju. But there are also things in the game. Yeah, but there are also things in the game that you can like turn the luck in your favor. As you go through the game, you collect cards that you can stack slot into your own deck, and you get to choose which of these cards you slot into your deck. And on each encounter, the dealer pulls those cards that you've had that you put in as well as his own. And so you can have certain like weapons, certain encounters that are fortuitous. You can get equipment that can change like dice rolls so that you can actually get an extra dice to meet your target roll, or you can get companions that can sort of change the favor of some of those luck games or add a little something. They also join you in combat, and each of them adds a little something to the combat as well.
Should we mention also that it doesn't look like your typical card game because you actually see the characters duking it out, and it actually is kind of beautiful.
Yeah, like the main parts of the game are literally between you sitting across the table from this mysterious man as he flips the cards over and you traverse this encounter, and going into these cards. And it's really nifty when you get a new sword or a new shield or just any new equipment, because literally when it realizes you haven't seen it for the first time, you get this cool little thing of that weapon or that gear drifting down into your hand from the card.
No, but you actually see the characters fighting in a scenario, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like you'd be on a farmland and you have this fighter fighting an ogre or something, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Like I said, that's the second part where you actually go into a combat scenario where you're controlling your character with all of this gear that you've collected, and you duke it out in a Batman Arkham style brawling thing.
You know what? You know what this reminds me of a little bit, and that is Archon. If you ever played Archon, which was by Electronic Arts, which was by Freefall Associates, I would love to see something like that again, in which it's sort of like a chess game, and when you move your pieces, they actually have to fight, but each character has different powers. Like the unicorn fires a laser beam at their enemies, or the banshee has this scream that surrounds her like a cloak that if you get caught and you get damaged, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's not far off from that, only you have more control over the actual battle itself. Like, you directly control your character, and your companion, they are controlled by AI, but you can also have them do, like, certain command moves that help out. Like, there's a sort of royal captain of the guard that she has a pistol and a sword, and when you activate her ability, she'll do a sword combo and then blast an enemy in the face with the pistol.
Well, she's on the cover of the actual logo.
Yeah, and she is awesome. She's easily my favorite, but there are other cool ones too.
So Scott, tell us what you've been playing. I mean, you told us last week, but you're going to have to say it again.
Okay, I've been playing the game Dark Cloud 2, which is a action RPG game where you it's, you know, not turn-based, and you fight enemies and you collect items from them, and you also have this mechanic in the game where you're taking pictures of things or ideas, and then you turn those ideas into inventions, and you can build new items.
You know what's funny is that what's it called? The camera taking aspect was borrowed like a year late, because this is not a new game. This is from 2002, and you're playing the remastered version, right?
Yeah, on PlayStation 4.
Right. So a year later, they did the same sort of mechanic with Beyond Good and Evil, in which part of the game was snapping photos of the characters in the 3D world.
I thought she was a journalist. That's why she was taking pictures.
I think she was doing it for the money. It wasn't a journalist.
Oh, that too. It's fine.
Yeah.
She was trying to uncover the conspiracy of the invaders because they were capturing people and nobody knew what they were doing with them.
And she got money for taking pictures of bunny rabbits. These bunny rabbits are part of the conspiracy.
We're in Dark Cloud 2. You're just taking pictures of ideas to make inventions. And you can also build up your weapon with upgrades.
Now, the thing about Dark Cloud 2 is it's very remotely related to Dark Cloud. It actually started life as Dark Chronicles, and it's just called Dark Cloud 2 here in the United States.
Yeah, I remember thinking, like,
no, it's funky.
Dark Cloud 1 had a very, like maybe these guys are trying after, like, the Sony version of a Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. right down to the fact that the character in the first game had the green sock on his head that everyone was like, oh, he's like a Link.
Mm-hmm. The past.
And I remember Dark Cloud 2, when I looked at it, it had very little in that way. I mean, it's still obviously an action-adventure. It still has RPG elements, but it was just completely different from what they did with the first game.
How far along are you
in the game? I don't know if it's completely different, because I think I remember in the first game, you were rebuilding stuff, weren't you? Like, you were building up the land again or something as you were going through dungeons that seemed very almost wizardry-like, because you were going section by, you know, block by block, and you still have that, because I'm going through a sewer system dungeon, and it has little sections, and as you do each section, you make your way through the overall dungeon area, and it's interesting because each dungeon is totally pre-generated, or it's new each time you play it, and you have medals to win. So, I mean, there's some similarities and differences. I could see why some people would feel Legend of Zelda, but I think it has its own charm.
Yeah. By the way, you should mention that Dark Cloud 2 was developed by Level 5, as was Dark Cloud 1.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so it's a good game company.
They do the Pokemans.
They also do Professor Layton.
Yes. I've been playing with a new console. I got my Xbox One X, Project Scorpio Edition, and I've basically been playing older games to see how they look, because there's a lot of games that actually have a patch that patches in 4K and sometimes HDR. And even if it doesn't, it upscales the game to 4K. To give you an example, I've been playing Fallout 3, which has its graphics upgraded to 4K. So you have 4K textures in Fallout 3. Fallout 4, same difference, except it also has HDR. Halo 5 is interesting in that it goes up to 4K, but it only has limited HDR. And I read an explanation that it was made in 2015 and it was too late to incorporate the HDR graphic patch. So they just did 4K textures and limited HDR. Otherwise, the console itself is as small as an Xbox One S, but it's like three times as heavy. It is dense. And I know there must be a lot of hardware in there, because unlike the Xbox One, it does heat up. You'll feel the case starting to heat up when it's playing. So it is chock full of goodness. One thing I'd like to note is that it sold 80,000 units in the UK in its first week. And to give you a comparison, the PlayStation 4 Pro did not sell 80,000 units until 4 weeks later. One of the things that I think we didn't give Microsoft enough credit for was, A, people are buying it. But that wasn't their goal. The real goal is this. The Xbox One S is now $180, and there's probably going to be Black Friday deals that are lower than that. So the Xbox One X is actually going to sell the Xbox One S by saying, well, we have this new thing, but guess what? You can buy the SS for ultra cheap, you know? And I think Microsoft really cares more about selling those units than the X, using the X as the Ferrari while the S is your Camry. And it helps sell software. And I think that's their end goal, is that they want their console to be selling software.
Mm-hmm.
So if an Xbox One S costs $150 to $180, you know, even if you own a PlayStation, you say, you know what, that's kind of cheap. You know, I wouldn't mind having it, even if it's not, you know, the latest hotness. I'm still going to get some of the games that are only on the Xbox One S. Well, on the Xbox One X, what funniest thing is, people are talking about exclusives. I'm thinking, you know what? If you have a multi-platform machine and the Xbox One X games look so much better, then it's actually an attempt to circle the market on third-party games. Let me give you an example. Assassin's Creed Origins. It looks amazing on the Xbox One X because it was built from the ground up to support what the Xbox One X can do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other versions don't look as well. As a matter of fact, Assassin's Creed Origins on the PlayStation 4, not the PlayStation 4 Pro. I don't know what's the deal with it. But it has a really crappy frame rate because they're trying to keep the graphics as good as possible and sacrificing the frame rate for that. You know, because gamers in a single-player game, they really care more about how it looks than, you know, how it runs. I mean, I know, Ted, I know you're going to say, no, I care more about frame rate. I mean, there's a lot of people who do, but in this case, it's interesting Microsoft's strategy. I mean, they definitely got the mind share. I mean, a lot of people have been talking about the X and this and that and posting their comparison videos and all that stuff. I mainly got it because now I'll be able to watch 4K video since it natively outputs in 4K. I mean, my 4K TV before was upscaling all my video to 4K, and now it's actually playing 4K.
Yeah.
So, it's a nifty piece of hardware. Unfortunately, I got a bunch off, so I actually just paid $350 for it rather than $500.
I think eventually I'm going to make a decision between those two because I have a 4K HDR TV.
I would say wait a bit and wait until Microsoft fully releases, until they fully release the Vive and the Oculus Rift for Xbox One X, because that's going to be their second thing. I know that Microsoft has their... They don't call it virtual reality. I think they call it enhanced reality set or something like that. But I will say this, you know, Assassin's Creed Origins, I don't own it, but I've played it on someone else's Xbox One X. Looks phenomenal. And this is, you know how we have the PC gaming master race, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least it's matching almost what the visuals you'll get on a high-end PC. And that's on your 4K TV.
I wonder if there's like, we've talked about this before, like if this is the point where at which we're going to stop seeing so many consoles.
Oh,
that was Scott dropping.
Scott dropped. I told you it was his connection.
I was going to keep it cool.
Why is the Iron Giant behind you, by the way? Actually, he's clinging to your shoulder.
He is. That's the part. That's the fun of that picture.
I'm going to tell you something. I actually got the Iron Giant VHS cassette like a month before it was released, and it had a little Iron Giant figurine in it, which I still have, which is sitting on my shelf right now.
So this is the Mondo Deluxe Iron Giant, actually built from 3D scans from the movie. He's about 18 inches tall. And, like, fully featured as far as, like, articulation goes and the arms and legs and even the fingers, which is how I got him to sort of hang on my shoulder like that.
I thought that was a drawing. I didn't know that was real. I have my little figurine just can move the arms and legs, you know, nothing fancy. Then again, it was an extra in the VHS cassette.
Now, this thing is the real deal. He even came with a little Hogarth, who is not articulate. He's just a little figurine of Hogarth.
That doesn't impress me. It has to include Dean.
But he has.
If it doesn't have Dean, then I'm not impressed.
He has some scrap metal and the S that he ripped off of that gas stop, and you can actually attach it to his chest like a magnet.
Wow. Okay.
Right. So, he's a nifty little dude.
No following. I forgot Vin Diesel's electronic voice.
they actually did a couple buttons on his back, too. One of them lights up his eyes, and the other one actually plays a few voices from the film.
Yes, but can he transform into a death bot?
I wish. He is pretty dang rad, but he's not that dang rad.
Does he have a little ding in his head?
He does.
Okay, so that's why he's not transforming into the Deathbot. He still has amnesia. So right now we're going to have to deal without Scott for a while because no matter how hard I try, I can't load him on. Which is unfortunate because I'd love to hear his opinion on at least one of these items. But we're going to move on to the first item. I know that you probably have something to say about this one. EA responds to community criticism of Battlefront 2 unlock system. And I should say Star Wars Battlefront 2. Star Wars Battlefront II Origin Access players have been making their voices heard over the game's unlock system ahead of its release next week. In particular, they've taken to Reddit to complain about iconic characters like Darth Vader being locked from the start, as well as the length of time it takes to unlock them. One user calculated that because of the fact you earn in-game credits based on time played rather than your score in a match, it'll take up to 40 hours to earn enough credits to unlock characters like Luke Skywalker, who costs 60,000, the cheapest character costs 20,000. Their calculations purely take into account credits earned during matches, not credits earned by completing challenges early in the game. Limiting your five opponents earns you 1,000, for example. EA has responded to the claim on Reddit thread. It says that it's, quote, looking at the results daily, unquote, for the time taken to earn credits, and will be, quote, continue to tune this to ensure that players feel a meaningful sense of reward. We selected initial values based on data from the open beta and other adjustments made to milestones rewards before launch. Among other things, we're looking at average per player credit earn rates on a daily basis, and we'll be making constant adjustments to ensure that players have challenges that are compelling, rewarding, and of course, attainable via gameplay. It has also responded to a different thread started by a user who is angry at having paid $80 for the game only for Darth Vader to be locked behind a game's progression system. EA responded in a similar way to the other post, adding that, the quote, the intent was to provide players with a sense of pride and accomplishment for different unlocking different heroes. Battlefront 2 will be coming out this coming Friday, November 17th. By the way, that is also an interesting thing to note, that it has a Friday release, and more developers are releasing on Friday instead of Tuesday. And that is to sync up with Europe. Now, the reason why we have the United States has a Tuesday release date is that it is similar to when Billboard would do its rankings. It would include the previous week. So in order for music companies to maximize the number of number of records sold, they would release them on Tuesday. And video games took its cue from that. So now we're having them released on Friday, like movies are, because movies have the big weekend release numbers, right? And that's why they release on Fridays and not Tuesdays. So Scott is back. So TJ, talk about this one.
Man, like, I get where people are coming in from about microtransactions. I get where people are coming from about, what they think of loot boxes and things like this credit thing where it's just like it takes a long time to go through a lot of the stuff to get the progression.
This is coming from someone who plays Rainbow Six Siege, by the way.
Yes. That said, a big fucking deal, eh? And, I mean, with enough time, you'll unlock all that stuff, and it doesn't really matter anyways. So, cool.
And you don't even have to win the matches. You just have to play in them.
Yes. And people are super mad because, well, where's the skill, man? Why can't I get unlocks for skills? Like, the skill is winning the game. I mean, if you win the game, then you... Yeah.
Or, I mean, they do have, like, they did mention that there are things that are done for skill, like killing...
Challenges.
Yeah. Here's the thing. This is also a beta, you know, and Electronic Arts is monitoring the numbers, you know.
And what it came down to is this drew death threats. This drew people making direct attacks on the developers, their friends, their families, sending emails saying that they were going to go after them. And, like, that's where I think, hey, you know what? Fuck you.
and you know, if whenever gamers say we're not entitled, you know, I usually point to this and say, "Oh yeah, really?
Yeah."
You know, and don't give me no true Scotsman, okay? That is you. I don't care if you don't do it. That's you. That's who. Yes. You know, if you don't want to be treated like babies, and by the way, that's why you don't see Half-Life 2 Episode 3 or Half-Life 3. Valve made it perfectly clear they did not want to see a repeat of what happened with Mass Effect Andromeda. And they don't want to have to deal with that bull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I get it. I don't get that. But, like, I get that there's a thing in the game that actually limits how many credits you can earn in certain modes. Like, if you're playing arcade mode, you can only earn so many credits in there per day, and then you have to wait 14 hours before you can earn them again. And that sucks. I don't like that at all.
Well, here's the thing. I think they want to prevent what happens like in World of Warcraft, like someone gets to level 80 in 48 hours or something like that. You know, they don't want people just ramping up the list, you know, and just, you know, I don't understand those speedrunners, by the way. I really don't. I don't understand. Is that what you consider fun? Really?
I don't either, but I also don't like a game telling me when I have to stop playing.
Well, you don't have to stop playing. You're just not going to get any more credits for it and for a while, that's all.
Yeah. I just... That's the kind of stuff that irks me, because it's an artificial limitation on progress, and I'm not a...
Well, you should say that, because it was during World of Warcraft. Initially, they had made it that after a certain amount of time, you wouldn't get any more XP until you stop playing. And people complain about that, you know, or it would, the number out of XP would decrease, and they reversed it. Instead, when you logged off and you came back on, you get an acceleration of XP going to normal, so that people were encouraged, hey, look, if you stop playing, you know, when you come back on, you're going to get more XP.
Yeah, I love that idea. I love the well-rested buff that they use in a lot of RPGs, where, like, take a break from the quest, take a nap, come back to it, and then you get 8 hours worth of, like, extra... And it's not a lot, it's like 8% or something like that, but it's still something worth doing, just because it gives you that little bit of a bonus for taking a break.
Warcraft is something like 150 to 200% for, like, 10 minutes, and then it goes down from there.
Yeah.
You get that initial really big boost. And you know what? I bet if Electronic Arts did that instead, you know, if you come back after not playing for 14 hours, you get a little bit of an XP boost. I think that would make people happier.
Yeah, I think so too. Because as it is, it's an artificial limitation. It basically tells you, okay, you've had enough fun, so you can go ahead and keep going, but we're not going to reward you for it. I don't like that. That said, I'm not going to threaten anyone's life over it. It's because that would be childish and stupid.
I want to play Darth Vader, man. Let me threaten somebody. Maybe they're actually role-playing as Darth Vader. I saw this video the other day, and I shared it on Twitter, so you can see it there, about this guy who did a two-hour video on YouTube talking about how awful the Jedi are and how even worse the Sith are. Talking about Freya's motivations, you know, and basically saying that the Jedi are a cult, literally a cult.
We lost Scott again.
He's popping in and out. So, it's just an amazing video, and I suggest you watch it, because it takes George Lucas's bad writing and Chris Avellone's good writing, because everybody knows that KOTOR 2 is basically a take that to the Star Wars universe. Mm-hmm. In KOTOR 2, it shines a light on everything that is bad and how poorly written the Star Wars franchise really is. You know, I mean, when you have this cult who says that a 9-year-old is too old to start the training, and what they really want are 3-year-olds to be taken away from their parents and never spoken to again, and then encourage them never to have sex or love anybody, that's a cult.
I was reading about people that are mad that they're ruining the legacy of Star Wars by making... Disney is ruining the legacy of Star Wars by making all these new movies and spinoffs.
Well, here's the thing.
To which I say, Ewok Adventure, Caravan of Courage.
You know, actually, I like the sequel, Battle for Endor. It was nicely dark.
Yeah.
Because in Battle for Endor, her family gets fucking murdered. Her entire family gets murdered, and all she has is this old guy who saves her, and now she has to get off the friggin' planet. I mean, all these characters you're following in the first film, including her teenage brother, are just straight up killed.
Let me put this to you. Can you defend the Star Wars Holiday Special in 1978?
Oh, I love it. It's awesome.
Oh, God.
It's awesome, but you have to understand, I love the Riff Tracks version, and it is chintzy beyond belief, and also one of the writers is my best friend.
All I'm going to say is, to all those people that think they're ruining the Star Wars legacy, they were doing silly-ass shit with Star Wars when you were a child, so
B. Arthur says she doesn't remember doing the episode, the special, only that she was singing to a bunch of people with funny masks on. And how could you not like Roger Corman and how unfunny he is? You know?
All I'm saying is that if Disney was like, hey, you know what? Let's do a spinoff series with Porgs and kids.
Well, here's the thing. Like, people are complaining about how the Transformers movies and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies are ruining things. But the Transformers, the cartoon, was built to sell a lot of Japanese toys. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they've been hoarded out like nothing else before, so who cares what Michael Bay as a producer does for it? There will always be different versions of the Turtles. There's only two versions of the Transformers. I mean, don't complain about when these 80s nostalgia are hoarded out, because they're hoarded out like nothing else.
I'll tell you what, I love the idea that the Ninja Turtles are going to be able to kick the crap out of Superman in 2017.
Oh, yeah, we haven't discussed that. Injustice revealed their... I was a little bit surprised by Enchantress, but not, you know. But here's the thing I have to tell you. Hellboy and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have never had a crossover comic. This is the first time they're ever going to interact.
Yeah. It's super rad. It's really cool in 2017 to see how these things are crossing over.
Now, here's the thing. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, all four of them are going to be a selectable character, so it makes me wonder how they're going to have the fight. I'm pretty sure they're going to be a bunch of four of them, and then whatever moves you make, it's going to have one of them pop out and do their thing. Or maybe they'll have it like you go through each turtle. If they're knocked out, the next one, and you have four turtles.
Maybe. I was thinking like Tri-Ninja from Mortal Kombat X, which was a crossover of Sektor, Cyrax, and Smoke.
This could be an interesting gameplay mechanic. I'm pretty sure what I just described is going to be what's used, actually.
Huh. Maybe.
It's going to be a tag team match for them, you know, and you just bring in each one that you want. I'm going to say something, though, that's probably going to have... people are going to love that, because they're going to have to memorize four different move lists now, not just... unless they're all the same and they just have different actions when you perform the same combo.
Yeah, they could just as easily make it a thing like they did with Supergirl and Power Girl.
No, it's not going to be different skins. I think it's just going to be... you have four characters and you can tag team them in and out. What I really want to see is what their super move is going to be. All four of them attacking at once, maybe?
Yeah. It'll be awesome, whatever it is. I'm certain of it. NetherRealms can do no wrong right now with what they're doing. They have
story mode. I hate that. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what their arcade ending is going to be. Hell, I want to see what Hellboy's...
When you said story mode, I was playing episode 4 of that. It was pretty cool. You're under the Bedrock world now.
What, Minecraft story adventure?
Yeah. When you said story mode, it reminded me that I actually played episode 4. It just came out like a couple days ago.
You know what's funny? I think episode 4 of Guardians of the Galaxy have come out, and I realized I didn't care, and I forgot that it even existed. Telltale.
Telltale.
Telltale is Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know, it's like...
I forgot about that.
I don't care. I will say I'm eagerly looking forward to episode 3, which I think is coming out this month, of Batman Telltale. And that I'm sort of interested in, because it's a different, you know, in that Batman universe, Tom and Martha Wayne were gangsters, and Vicki Vale turned out to be a cult leader, you know, and Harley Quinn is a sane woman who's using the Joker. So I'm really interested in seeing how that handles. And I'm glad there's an alternate version of Batman that doesn't have to deal, you know. Here's the thing. These are all lower-level characters that he's fighting. You know, he's not fighting Darkseid. He's not fighting people that Superman might be fighting. His first enemy in the entire thing was Carmine Falcone, and then Vicki Vale. You know, it's not the end of the world. It's just battle over Gotham. You know.
Boy, howdy. We traveled a long ways from microtransactions suck and entitled fans suck worse to
Amanda Waller. I like Amanda Waller in Telltale Game.
I thought it was also interesting that I read that apparently 70,000 people canceled their pre-orders for the Battlefront 2 game because of that fiasco.
Well, guess what? So what if you don't pre-order? You know, if you don't want to pre-order, don't pre-order. You can buy it a month after when, you know. See, that's the thing. You know, people complain about price. Here's the thing. Gamers whine and then contradict themselves. remember how gamers whined about $15 downloadable content map packs for Call of Duty? They whined about it, and then they paid for it. Mm-hmm. If you're so upset about it, don't buy it. You know?
I didn't buy it.
Well, you don't play Call of Duty now, do you?
No, I don't.
I mean, they're pressured because their friends are probably playing the DLC pack, and, you know, they may want to be on ranked matches and don't want to be stuck playing, you know, other. But still, you don't have to. No one's forcing you to buy anything. You know, Shadow.
I will say this. Also, EA also just put this out today. In the fallout of this, they lowered the cost on Heroes based on like all the complaining and stuff. And I hope that wasn't in response to the worst parts of the gaming community. Because God forbid you give those guys the idea that they have any entitlement. But
I have an idea, though. You know what I would love to see them do if they had the guts to do it?
Say, what's that?
Due to all the death threats and the abuse we're receiving, we're going to not release this game for another year.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Unfortunately, EA does like money.
No, I'm just saying, well, they'll make even more money that way, I think, because they'll have to wait.
Well, apparently,
we're going to refund all your money, and then we're going to...
Apparently, EA is cutting the cost of the Heroes down.
Yeah. Instead of taking 40 hours to get Darth Vader, it'll take like 5 hours to get Darth Vader now. Which, I mean, like, whatever.
Yeah.
At least they didn't say, well, you can buy him for $5. Then they would have went berserk.
Yeah. How much of a fuck you would that be?
Yeah, that really pissed people off.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next...
Okay, fine.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. L.A. Noire Remastered requires 29 gigabytes, forcing Switch version to require a Microsoft SD card. This is from videogamer.com. Rockstar is gearing up for the re-release of L.A. Noire on modern formats in a couple of weeks, but if you're planning to pick it up on Nintendo Switch, you'll need a separate micro SD card before you're allowed to download it. As spotted by users on the Rockstar recently updated their support page for the detective game, the addition of the game featured on the eShop will require 29 gigabytes of storage, which is larger than the internal storage that comes with the console, after factoring in system software. As a result, the game must be installed to a micro SD card inserted before commencing the download. People buying the physical version of the cartridge fare a little bit better, but at 14 gigabyte, it still requires a hefty chunk of the console's 32 gigabyte hard drive. Furthermore, any micro SD cards used must have a read speed of at least 60 megabytes per second, Nintendo's own guidelines. L.A. Noire releases on the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch on November 14th.
Which is tomorrow.
Frankly, who hasn't played this game that wants to already? You know, I played this on PS3. I don't really have the desire to buy it again. And this just goes to further show the lack of foresight on Nintendo's hardware specs by having such small hard drives or hard drive space to get those games, and it doesn't look like they planned ahead very well.
This reminds me.
I don't think it's that they didn't plan ahead very well. I think it's exactly what they want you to do is buy extra hard drives because that drives up the cost of what you're getting.
You know, they're not saying buy Nintendo micro SD cards.
That's true, but they do offer them.
But it doesn't guarantee that you're going to buy their hard drive. I don't know, yeah.
Well, when you go to the Nintendo website, there is actually a list of micro SD cards that Nintendo guarantees will work with their Switch, as opposed to maybe going out and buying your own and finding out it doesn't work. I think that's sort of something they're banking on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I remember the XBLA games had bigger sizes than this. Wasn't it like 50 gigabytes or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it was 50 megabytes.
Well, and the big thing behind this is, like, you have to remember they did do a lot of stuff with, like, facial scanning. The town was recreated perfectly. The cars from that era were recreated very nicely.
Oh, it was done beautifully. It really was. You're driving around L.A., L.A. during, what was it, 1940-something? 48, I guess. It's after the war. But it was, yeah, beautiful cars. You could tell what actors you were looking at, and it was a fun detective game. And I've played it already, and I think it's just like with Skyrim. You know, I've played the game. Yeah. I don't need it on the Switch.
Do you know that they also changed the game in that it's no longer what was it? Intimidate or what was it? Doubt or something like that, and they changed it to Good Cop, Bad Cop.
Ah, okay.
Which makes no sense at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was all about finding the right answer to each of those questions, which I was obsessed with back in the day. I think if I was going to go back to the game, which I've been thinking about this a lot recently.
You know what the thing is?
I would go back and be the worst cop I could possibly be.
Here's the thing. You could game that system, too, by constantly accusing them of lying. And when they said they weren't lying, you say, okay, because there was no penalty for that. But if they were lying, then you got them. It's like, I didn't know. You're lying. No, I'm not. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I didn't know. Oh, you're lying. No, I'm not. Oh, you're lying.
Well, actually, no, because I remember that very distinctly. The game had a correct answer system where, like, going the right path on the investigation each step of the way.
Of lying was never harmed. The only thing that would harm you is if you made the wrong assumption. But if you doubted someone, it would not, and then recanted, it would not damage your playthrough.
Huh.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know about that.
I just cheated outright. I just got all the correct answers and just did them at once. I lost patience with it after one playthrough. I said, when I play it again, I'm not gonna screw around. I'm just gonna see what the actual answers are. I already finished this, so you know, LA Noire Remastered is also Xbox One enhanced, and I am definitely not getting it because here's the thing: I have LA Noire for the Xbox 360. They did not make it backward compatible, so I'm not gonna reward them for not making it backward compatible. I'm not paying for the same game twice. Sorry, I'm
not. Exactly.
You know. And I know there's a reason why they didn't make it backward compatible. There's 50,000 on the Xbox page of people asking for LA Noire backwards compatible, and they're not going to do it. So I'm not buying it. And that, my friends out there who are whining about Battlefront 2, if you're not happy with it, then don't buy it. No one's forcing you to. You know, I wonder if a lot of people there understand that this is an expensive hobby.
But with your wallet.
Yeah. This is an expensive hobby. If you don't have the money, find something else to do that doesn't cost as much money. Like macrame. I'm kidding. That was bitchy of me. But yeah, I mean, LA Noire was nice, but I did like the story, and I like the fact that Cole Phelps was not the protagonist. Even though you were playing as him almost the entire, for like 80% of the game, he was not the protagonist. It was Kelso as the protagonist, because the first time you see Kelso, it's like an actual noir movie. A mysterious woman walks into his office and offers to hire him to help, you know, and it's like the beginning of every film noir thing. And we find out that Cole Phelps is an asshole. He's not a good person.
No.
Yeah.
And even the end of the game, Kelso says to his friends on the boat, you know what, forget about him, we have to do what's right, you know, that sort of thing. But like I said, I like the story, but I'm not going to pay for it twice. I mean, here's the thing, I know that there are PC Steam sales. If I see LA Noire for $3 on Steam, I'll say sure, why not?
Yeah.
So, we're going to move on to the next item. Physical media, still, quote-unquote, nation's format of choice for video games, says eBay. Despite the rise in digital sales, online retailer eBay has announced that the physical media is still a dominant format when it comes to games, according to research conducted in August earlier this year. Surveying 2009 adults from the UK, the research findings, published to coincide with the release of eBay's Guide to Physical Media, found that almost a third of shoppers, 29%, had bought a physical disc or cartridge in the same year. Furthermore, 36% of the participants aged between 35 and 44 actively preferred playing physical games to digital ones. Additionally, the survey found that 51% of those aged between 18 and 24 had bought a game on physical media in the last year, with 1 in 10 owning more than 100. What the hell? 10% of people, millennials aged 18 to 21, have more than 100 physical games? Wow. Anyways, on the other end of the age spectrum, 26% of those surveyed aged between 65 and 74 said they owned at least one video game, with even 20% of over 75-year-olds surveying saying they the same. Quite obviously, the survey has been commissioned with the intention of driving business towards eBay's physical media sales, but nonetheless, these are quite interesting findings, especially given the recent issues with digital games, like the recent news over L.A. Noire's download size, which we just discussed. I will say this, though. Dirty disk error has driven me more and more preferring digital, because if at the very least you don't get dirty digital dirty disk errors with a digital thing, with a digital game. And I admit I'm lazy.
Or your disks are getting scratches or damaged.
Or just getting old.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I don't like having to get up from my seat, walk over to the machine, put in a disk, and then back into my seat. I'm lazy in that way. I mean, I have to do that with Fallout 4. I don't have to do that with Fallout 3. Oh, that's the other thing I forgot to mention, is that I'm discovering that Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 actually suck. But we can discuss that later. So you have the security of owning a disc, you know? It's not like you go to your hard drive and find it's gone because maybe the, you know, for whatever reason... I mean, it's a paranoid fantasy, I know, but, you know, like, they decide, oh, we're going to take away your games because look at the EULA, you know? And there's something about owning a physical disc. But having a digital version also helps, too. So, TJ, what percentage of the games you pick up are actually physical?
0% in 2017. I think I've been handed a few physical copies, but I haven't bought any. I've gone almost fully digital, just because it's much more convenient for me to deal with that than, like, keep the discs around anymore.
I do have some DS games that are physical, and I'm playing on my 3DS, so there is that. Like, the Metroid Returns, that was a physical game.
Handhelds, I'm playing that, you know, one. But here's the thing about handhelds. Maybe the PlayStation Vita had a lot of PSN purchases, but with Nintendo handhelds, the eShop is so bad that I don't think anybody bothers with that.
Well, yeah. It's still physical media, yeah. But I do think eBay's little survey there is heavily biased. But yeah, as far as PC gaming is concerned, it's all digital, and I think even the games I got for PS4 are all digital as well.
I don't even know when the last time I ever bought a physical version of a PC game. I think the last thing was sent to me was the latest World of Warcraft expansion, and that's it.
I know what the last one was for me. It was Skyrim. That was the last time I bought a physical PC game.
I didn't buy it physically. I got that on Steam. What's the last PC game that you got physically, Scott? I mean, not Scott, I mean TJ.
PC game?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. oh, my gosh. World of Warcraft, Mists of Pandaria.
Oh, well, there you go. So, well, and I only got that because the people at Blizzard send me it. You know, it's like, here. I said, no, I'm done with
Warcraft. We bought the special edition because it came with a sweet mouse pad, a special mount.
And it came with a free copy of Kung Fu Panda.
It came with an art book, which was which is basically a art book for Kung Fu Panda. But no, it's... I think the last PS4 game I had was... it was Final Fantasy 15. I got it for Christmas, and that was last year.
Yeah, people sent it to you, but you didn't buy it.
No.
That doesn't count. It can't be a gift.
Okay. Guilty Gear. I bought the special edition for Guilty Gear Xrd.
You know, that reminds me. It was a story that that isn't here, but I'm pretty sure you heard about it. And that is with PSN games that receive a special edition physical media, ESRB is going to charge. And a lot of smaller companies are bowing out of releasing physical media because they can't afford the $3,000, I think it is, that ESRB charges people to rate their games.
Yeah. That was a new mandate that the ESRB put out too, where digital, like going from digital to physical copies will now require a certain fee. I think it's like $3,000, which for Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft, that's no big deal. But for indie creators like Defiant, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that.
One of them said they were pulling out of releasing their digital game because of it, you know?
Yeah, the folks behind Devolver Digital.
But that's the publisher. I forgot the name of the developer who did that.
It was the folks behind Ruiner, which is it's a Polish development company.
Oh, so the same guys who did Absolver, too.
Yeah, the folks behind Absolver pulled out as well, just because $3,000 for an indie developer? That's like an entire month of like work for them. That's an entire salary. These are guys that a lot of these guys are living meal to meal. A lot of these guys are busting their ass hour after hour trying to get those games out, and then they have to pay a $3,000 fee. Yeah, it's not hard to see who that mandate favors.
You know what you could do if the ASRB really wanted to fix it is that they could have indie developers for each game that they did do a request form to not be charged to have a rating. You know, it's like a form, what's it called, making sure that they're not doing this as a dodge. Because that's one of the things that the ESRB is worried about, is that you could release a digital game, no matter what your size, and then release it without the ESRB rating, or a free ESRB rating, because, hey, look, it was digital, and now it's physical, you know? So there should be some sort of writ about a company and a company size, because here's the thing, they also charge different amounts based on the budget of the game, right? But still the minimum is still too much for these people.
ESRB has put out things in the past that made it a little easier for developers. Like there's not as much of a fee to just going digital. And there are ways to get your game out to like international groups that will like do the rating for it, and you can distribute it online. But that's online only. If you have any inkling about going physical from digital, it's going to be harder under this mandate.
Yeah, and usually, you know, when you have something like Terraria did and other games, you know, usually they come out with a game and a lot of nice little tchotchkes with it. Like, oh, it comes with an album, or it comes with these figurines and all that stuff, because they're basically trying to justify having a physical release of these really indie game, these indie digital games. So there's a lot of nice little tchotchkes that come with it.
D-Pad Studio, next year, they were getting ready to release Owlboy on the Switch and on PS4.
Your favorite game ever, isn't it?
Yes.
Owlboy is a beautiful game.
I still have not played it.
You should. Like, if you have any feeling for a Metroidvania or just like a stick shooter with story to it, then it's well worth it.
You know, I haven't played that other game that everybody says I must play as well. Oh, jeez, I forgot the name of it. It's, like, considered the best indie game ever, and I forgot the name of it. It's the one...
Well, Owlboy is, like, the biggest underdog ever.
Undertale, that's the game.
Undertale, okay.
I haven't played Undertale yet either, so... Hell, I haven't played Ori or the what's it called, or the Brothers game. You know, I just haven't had the time.
What are you doing with your life, John?
I've been playing Fallout 4. No, I'm kidding. No.
Okay, time well spent. I see.
Actually, you know, here's the thing. Actually, I didn't mention this in the what have you been playing lately, but I've been playing a lot more Civ 6 lately. I don't know what it is. It's because it's one of the PC games that I played. You know, the other thing is also, as part of a Humble Bundle, I got Alien Isolation for PC, and I haven't played that yet either.
Oh, you missed the time for it. Halloween is over.
Well, I don't care about Halloween. Oh, that's right. I've been playing Middle-Earth Shadow of War for a long time. And
watch.
I did get the golden ending, and I swear, you know, it made me miss the ending, the actual ending after the slog of Act 4, when you get the actual ending, you know, which ties into the Lord of the Rings. And it really is very sweetly done. I was very impressed with it. And I don't know. You know, I hear that it's bad storytelling. No, it isn't. No, it's great storytelling. I mean, I'll tell you what bad storytelling is. That's what NetherRealms is best at, bad storytelling. I don't mind the individual dialogue during the matches or the arcade endings, but the main story of Injustice 2 is so bad. It makes me want to slap the characters in the face, especially Wonder Woman. I don't know what they did to Wonder Woman. They made her such... I don't know.
They made her an evil bitch with no redeeming qualities. That's what they did.
For no reason. That's the problem I have. For no reason.
Like, she's super mean to everybody all the time in that game. And I think you're right. That is one of my least favorite things about...
I want the main Wonder Woman to come in and slap her.
I want Gal Gadot to come in and just be like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. By the way, we don't have it in the notes here, but there's also been a controversy swirling around Overwatch 2 lately. And that is, I just watched some videos about these people who say they're not going to play anymore because of all the balance issues and, you know, a lot of the problems that are with that game. And they're concerned because it's so popular right now, they don't think it's going to get fixed anytime soon.
Hmm. I don't think that's true at all. I think that's a silly statement to make because...
They say that the toxicity is reaching League of Legends / Dota levels.
Right, but the development team behind it has worked tirelessly to make that game better and better and better and rebalance things left and right. So to say that they're not going to fix it is...
Well, it's almost impossible to fix, though.
I don't know.
Also, they're also we also haven't discussed that PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds is gearing up for their Xbox release, and it's going to be in full 4K HDR as well. I have not played it, but everybody keeps on raving about it to me.
You could play that, or you could play the what is it? Fortnite Battle Royale, which a lot of people have told me is better.
Yeah, we haven't discussed that either, by the way. That's some of the news in the past 2 weeks. Did we discuss it? Did we discuss the accusations that that Fortnite was ripping off PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds?
They absolutely were, but at the same time, that guy doesn't have a trademark on an entire genre of video game.
Especially the game that I really want to play is Project Darwin, and that's basically the same kind of game, too, and I think they developed that independently.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Like... Right. Hey, buddy, you actually ripped off of The Hunger Games and
they ripped off Battle Royale.
They did both.
I mean, the name of the Japanese movie was Battle Royale, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So that's what I'm saying.
You didn't come out with an original idea yourself. You just took another one and turned it into a video game.
Yeah. Anyways, the last item... is something we already discussed in this very podcast, but why don't you take it, TJ? And actually, you know what? We did discuss this completely. Take it away, TJ, so we just get through it.
Xbox One S, available for lowest price yet, from Polygon. Microsoft has announced its Black Friday sale, and if you've been waiting to pick up an Xbox One S console, this one's for you. The Xbox One S will be available exclusively through the Microsoft Store for $189. That's around $40 to $50 cheaper than deals at other retail locations. Although Microsoft doesn't specify which version of the console is available at that price, it's safe to assume that this is the company's 500GB base model. Additional 500GB and 1TB Xbox One S consoles are available for $50 more, according to the company's website. Games like Forza Motorsport 7, Gears of War 4, Halo Wars...
I think that's supposed to be Halo Wars 2.
Yeah, Halo Wars 2 and Forza Horizon 3 are $20 off their standard market price in the Microsoft Store. Additional deals on peripherals, including $20 off Xbox wireless controllers, $15 off on headsets, and $10 off on 3-month or 6-month Xbox Live Gold subscriptions, are also available through the store. If you're looking to get in into VR, or as Microsoft refers to as technology, mixed reality, there are a number of deals available through the store, too. Microsoft doesn't specify what the deal prices are, but notes that customers can save up to $100 on MR headsets from various partners such as Acer, Dell, HP, Lenovo, and Samsung. Microsoft lists a few sales from affiliate companies like Dell. Dell's Alienware 17 laptop is available for $1,600, but again, doesn't list the original price. Without specs, it's hard to know what model this is referring to. More information will be available when Dell's Black Friday sales begin on November 15th.
I will add something that I didn't before. One of the good things about this is that it's going to force Sony and maybe Nintendo to drop their prices for the for this upcoming Black Friday. I'm less likely for Nintendo since the Switch is still the new hotness. But, you know, if you're looking to buy a PS4, I'm willing to bet you'll be able to get one for $150, $160, $170 in response to what Microsoft is selling it for. So, you know, right now the customers win.
Yeah. I mean, $189, I could raise up that for Black Friday sale and actually get my hands on an Xbox. But I'm probably going to wait and see what happens with, like, the bigger tiers on the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X before I make a decision on that.
Well, they've already had a bundle for the Xbox One X in which you can get an Xbox One X with an Elite controller bundled with it for $50 off.
Oh, so that's only, like, $600
for. Yeah, but here's the thing. Oh, you know, I never mentioned the Xbox One X controller is a little smaller, and I'm finding I favor it over my Elite controller. I mean, yes, you can remove the things and change the things out on the Xbox One Elite controller, but the Xbox One X controller feels so good in your hands. It's the best controller that Microsoft released so far, and that's including the Elite to me.
That's cool.
So if you do see, I'm pretty sure there's going to be software bundles too, like get it with Gears 4, you know, for the same price, you know, no extra price and stuff like that. Well, like I said, when you have a sale like this, other companies have to drop their prices to match, at least match, if not go lower. Like, I really want to play a baseball game, and, you know, the only baseball game out there is The Show, and The Show is only on PlayStation, you know, and it sucks for me, but, you know, if I really want to get a baseball game, I'll have to get a PS4.
Mm-hmm.
Scott?
I'm definitely not buying any.
Well, Scott, consoles. See, now here's the thing. I was going to get you an Xbox One S for Christmas, and now I'm not
sure
get
you
it.
Were. But
I will say this. Go ahead, Scott.
If this looks good to other people, that's more power to them. But I'm not particularly interested in the Xbox. And even though I want to switch, I definitely am not going to get it on Black Friday. That's a tradition I wish would, you know, end already. But yeah, I guess.
You know, when they had the contest to win an Xbox One X and even an Xbox One X Scorpio Edition, if I won one, I was just going to send it over to you, TJ.
I would have taken it.
Oh, you're going to say no? I don't want one. I'm just going to sell it on eBay.
I mean, that would also be a viable option. And then I would buy a PS4 Pro and really piss you off.
I don't care. I don't really care. Lord. Don't you own a Pro already?
No, I don't. I still have my original Destiny Glacier White PS4.
And you're using VR in that machine? That's awfully shitty. You have to get a Pro at the very least to do good VR.
It's worked pretty dang well for what I've used it for. I mean, it did that Psychonauts Robinson Ruin game pretty dang well.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Tim Schafer has been posting a lot more on Twitter lately, which tells me that they're past the crunch and now they're just doing the he has a lot more free time.
That's exciting. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm ready for it.
I'm waiting for my book bag. You know the pack that Raz wears in the game, you know, which the badge is attached to it? That's my book bag that I got for my huge, huge, huge backing of Psychonauts 2. That's one of the items.
Nice.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. My Twitter feed is at Jonah Falcon.
Mine is at Johnny Chugs.
Mine is at Alpha Shark.
And we will see you next week.